Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
I do think that there are cases in which validity proofs are clearly superior to a crypto economic guarantee. So if you think about like what's required to crypto economically secure a system, you need to actually pay validators to actually restake ETH for your service. And you need to ensure that there's enough stake such that the cost of launching an attack is higher than the potential reward that an attacker would receive if the attack is successful.
This episode of The Protocol is sponsored by the Stellar Community Fund.
Dive deep into the blockchain realm with The Protocol podcast, with CoinDesk founding editor of The Protocol newsletter, Brad Cowan, and tech journalists Sam Kessler and Margot Nykerk. They unravel the intricate technologies powering cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and Ethereum, one block at a time. Just a reminder, CoinDesk is a news source and does not provide investment advice.
Hello and welcome to The Protocol Podcast. I'm Brad Cowan here with my co-hosts Margot Nykerk and Sam Kessler. So excited to dive into today's show with the latest news and developments in technology behind crypto and blockchains. First, please do not forget to subscribe to our weekly newsletter, The Protocol, on Coindesk.com. And let's get right into it. Today, we do have a pretty incredible guest. And I know I always say that, but we have had some really good guests lately. But an especially good guest today in the form of Brennan Farmer of Polygon, who's one of the top architects of their tech and their strategy. And we're super lucky to have you, Brennan. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. Really appreciate being here. I don't know if saying incredibly good is setting the bar a little bit too high, but
well, yeah. You're going to have to meet the expectations. Let's just put it that way. So, but all right. Well, Brennan, you know, just watching Polygon over the past few years and kind of rewinding just to kind of get us going here, thinking about 2021, and it was just Polygon all the time, and your token was zooming. And that was when you were really working on the POS, what is now called the POS chain, right? And fast forward, and the tech kind of shifted. But what I've noticed about y'all is you really pivoted with the tech and really have sort of all completely overhauled your game plan as well. And I just thought maybe you could talk a little bit about what is the strategy now for Polygon? And you have so many different projects that I see you working on, and it seems like maybe they're disconnected sometimes or different, trying different things, but is there a particular direction where you think things are going that might kind of tie all of it together?
So I should first specify that I wasn't actually a part of Polygon in 2021. So anything bad that's happened since 2021,
okay,
you can probably blame
pass
on me, because all the momentum that we had in 2021 was actually before Polygon acquired the project that I was working on called Mir. I think that you can look at what's happened to Polygon since then as being like a really high conviction bet on ZK technology. So Polygon acquired a couple ZK projects to sort of build in-house talent that didn't exist within Polygon at the time. And so I think that you can view this strategy as basically being two things. It's first, like, to continue to innovate and to push the underlying ZK technology forward. And I think that we've done that very successfully. So we released Plonky 2, which was a proving system in 2022 that was, I would say, between 50 and 100x faster than anything that was possible on Ethereum at the time. We are almost ready to release Plonky 3, which is a further improvement on Plonky 2. But on the product side, I think that you can view Polygon as basically doing two things, like deploying ZK-powered L2s that settle to Ethereum. So basically enabling this vision of like horizontally scalable block space that scales to meet demand. But we're doing something that's really, really important in addition to that, which is we're building the ag layer, which is designed to fix the problem of L2 fragmentation on Ethereum. And so that's something that we are super, super excited about.
Now, the ag layer, as we were discussing just before the show started, it can get real complicated real fast. But I was just sort of talking with Margot before the show. And my idea was, if you had kind of a real world analogy to the ag layer, maybe something in the physical world or mechanical world that people might relate to, and what is that?
Yeah, that's a tricky one. So maybe give me two attempts. And I guess for all the listeners, we've agreed ahead of time that we're going to take as many takes as we need for me to explain this in a way that's approachable. And so I don't know what take you're actually viewing that makes in the episode. But so the first example that I would give is something that's physical. And I think you can look at it sort of like interstates or like high-speed trains. And so right now we have block space on Ethereum. We have L2s that settle to Ethereum. And the problem is that any one L2 is not going to accommodate everything that a user is going to want to do in crypto. And so sooner or later, they're going to need to take their funds that are on some L2, some region of Ethereum block space, and they're going to need to move it to another region. And right now, that requires like 45 minutes of latency to go through the native bridge between two ZK rollups. But with the ag layer, we can do that safely in 1 to 2 seconds. And so this is like connecting disparate regions of Ethereum block space in a way that reduces fragmentation, unifies liquidity, and unifies state. I think another way to look at this is like similar to how the internet works and how the internet evolved. Like the internet is a unified environment for information. So if I am in the US and I want to access a website in Europe, I don't need to think about like how I'm going to bridge my packet or my request like all the way across the Atlantic Ocean. I can just type in a URL, and all of the complexity of getting data from this other geographic region to me is like completely abstracted away. And so I think if we think about like what we want to build in terms of the internet of value, like making Ethereum like the value layer of the internet, that kind of is what we need, is like a unified environment for value and liquidity and state.
Just to say that I think we'll take both of those takes, Brendan. And I'm just going to ask one more, and then I'm going to throw it to Margot. In learning about the ag layer and hearing you talk about it, the question that comes to my mind is, do you need everybody to buy into the ag layer in order for it to work? In other words, if it's just, if the whole point is getting everybody in that one layer, is it by definition, it needs to be the only thing?
So it doesn't need to be the only thing, but I think that there are network effects and there are advantages in being part of the ag layer. And so I think you raise a really good point, which is that there's sort of like a cold start problem. There might be resistance from other rollup ecosystems to kind of converging on a single credibly neutral piece of infrastructure. But the way that we've built the ag layer is very much with this in mind. Like the ag layer is designed to allow chains to completely reserve sovereignty and choice and like to completely govern their rollups. And so you're not really giving up anything by participating in the ag layer. The ag layer is like very minimal, credibly neutral infrastructure that allows us to address fragmentation across roll-up ecosystems. And like for us, like we don't look at it from like a value capture perspective. We're not like charging roll-ups rent to participate in the ag layer. Like there's no sort of like fee sharing or profit sharing dynamic that occurs. The way that I would look at it is it's like a positive sum, only a positive sum transaction, where if you're a roll-up that has some economic value on your chain, whether you have users or value or like some DeFi primitive or some like innovation in your execution environment, you can bring that to the ag layer. And the ag layer obviously benefits because you're bringing economic value, but you are able to tap into all of the users, all of the liquidity that already exists on the ag layer. And so I think that, you know, in the optimistic case, it becomes a no-brainer for chains, even ones that are like nominally competitive with Polygon. Because like take the POS chain, for example, there's still like $3 billion bridge to that chain. There's a lot of activity and usage. Those chains would be able to tap into everything that already exists in the Polygon ecosystem. And I think that the result would be a positive sum win-win outcome for everyone.
You know, this is a great transition because you sort of bring the ag layer into our conversation as sort of that connects all these different mini ecosystems within the Polygon ecosystem, right? You know, we were talking about in the beginning a little bit about how y'all have like pivoted to this ZK roadmap. And I feel like we at CoinDesk, we're writing a lot about Polygon because there's a lot of stuff going on at Polygon in terms of like tech. Ag layer sounds like this is the future, like what you are betting on in Polygon. But I want to know, what is Polygon today? Because there are all these different, like I said, mini ecosystems, right? Like you, we mentioned the POS chain. We've talked a lot about here about the ZK EVM. So just like for our listeners, lay out what it is, what Polygon is, what this L2 ecosystem looks like would be great to get your take on.
Yeah, sure. So I think first is the Polygon POS chain, which is a side chain that Brad mentioned earlier. That was what sort of made Polygon in 2021. That exists. It has a lot of usage, a lot of activity. The plan for that is to upgrade it to a ZK-powered chain so that it can plug into the ag layer. In addition to Polygon POS, we have Polygon ZKVM. That's a type 2-ish ZKVM that basically presents an identical developer environment to the Ethereum L1, but it's a roll-up and it's more scalable. I would say that the current state of the Polygon ZKVM is, it's, I would say, maturing. I think every roll-up has gone through this like sort of uncomfortable period where they launch and then they discover that certain design changes were maybe not the right ones. So Arbitrum and Optimism did this where they discovered that it's actually not a very good idea to use a custom EVM execution client to run your rollup. And we actually learned the exact same lesson because we launched the Polygon ZKVM with a custom EVM execution client. And so in the short term, what's happening with that chain is we're completely revamping the tech stack, the prover, the client. And I think that in the coming months, we're going to see like a huge leap forward in maturity and a huge leap forward in like what that chain is actually able to do. And we're going to be able to drive more activity and usage to it.
This is the ZK EVM chain you're talking about? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Like, frankly, we just have not had enough confidence in the maturity of the chain to actually invest a lot of time and effort into driving usage to it. And then beyond that, you get into sort of like some of the other R&D projects that Polygon has been working on. So one of these is Polygon Maiden. So Maiden is this really, really cool kind of like next-gen execution environment. It's not an EVM, but it. I think one way to look at it is it's trying to answer the question like, if you didn't have the EVM and you were trying to build like a blockchain from scratch, what would it look like? And I think that it would look a lot like mine. But I think the way to look at all of these projects, so POS, ZKVM, Maiden, is they're all going to like power block space in the Polygon ecosystem and the ag layer ecosystem. And they're going to offer choice for developers. Mm-hmm. So a developer could build a chain on Maiden or on ZKVM, a type 1 or a type 2 ZKVM. And I think this is a really good thing for developers because they have, like, they get to customize and have sovereignty over their execution environment, but they don't lose out on, like, access to liquidity or access to users in the Polygon ecosystem.
And so, you know, you mentioned that you guys are working on some new technological innovations. I think part of that, you know, we've written about this prover. I'm curious, though, because POS chain was sort of like the core of Polygon a year or 2 years ago, right, prior to ZKVM launch. And now there's all these other ZK-powered technologies in the ecosystem. And so part of that, what I remembered is that POS chain is going to eventually become ZK compatible. Where does, like, I know that the prover fits into this, but like how, or it's going to be, it plugs it into the ag layer. Can you clarify that a little bit? Like, when do we anticipate this happening?
The timeline for the POS chain. So I used to step back. We developed a type one ZKVM prover, which basically allows you to take any existing EVM chain and generate proofs for it. You don't have to like migrate the state. You don't need to change anything about how the client works. You can just immediately start generating proofs that guarantee the validity of every transaction on that chain. And so the timeline for actually bringing the POS chain and upgrading it to a ZK powered L2 is before end of year. It's a little bit complicated because the bridge for the POS chain secures a lot of value, obviously. And I think we just want to be really careful about the migration of an existing running chain that actually has a lot of activity and users. And so we just want to kind of handle that, I think, judiciously is the right word.
Sure. But I'm curious too, like, I bring this up because as y'all have mentioned, you're betting heavily on ZK. And so this POS chain used to be like the way to scale Ethereum. So like, what is the need for the POS chain when you have all these other chains that like do that purpose? Especially, I mean, I know there's like a ton of, you know, value locked into this now and all sorts of apps that are probably on it. But where does the POS chain go when all these other new chains are sort of like overtaking its purpose?
Yeah. So maybe I'll try to answer that in like a weird way that eventually gets to answering your question. So I think that like one way to look at the development of the ag layer is it's trying to solve this like structural problem that exists for chains. And that structural problem is if you want to launch a chain, you have to do two things. So first you have to design something like that adds value, like a new execution environment, maybe like a new DeFi primitive, like something that didn't exist before that you think can fill like a need in the market. And the second thing that you have to do is you need to figure out how to bootstrap activity and liquidity and value on that chain. And so that second thing that you do is you run this playbook that was initially, I think, kind of popularized by Polygon, where you release a token, you use the token to do liquidity mining incentives and airdrops, and you try to overcome the cold start problem by like crypto economically engineering your way into liquidity usage. And this was frustrating because we'd done this for the POS chain, but now we had a new ZKVM chain. And we basically had to like rerun the same playbook where we had to figure out a way to incentivize usage and to attract value so that we could have a functioning ecosystem, especially in DeFi, that would actually support usage and would offer value to users. And so one way to look at the ag layer is it's like eliminating this problem and this challenge for new chains. They no longer need to think about like, how do I bootstrap liquidity and usage on my specific chain? It's more about how do I build something that adds value and then plug into the liquidity and value and user base that already exists in the ecosystem that's built around the ag layer. And so I think the way that I would look at the POS ZK upgrade is it's less about like, how do we make the POS chain competitive with ZKVM? I think the POS chain will just represent like additional capacity, additional block space in the Polygon ecosystem. But it's really important to take all of the value and the users that are sort of like sticky on the POS chain and onboard them into the Aglayer ecosystem. And so that's kind of the way that we're thinking about the upgrade.
That's really great, Brendan. Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Have a blockchain project idea and need funding to make it happen? Look no further. The Stellar Community Fund is here to help bring your project to life on the Stellar Network. This year alone, over $10 million in XLM awards have been allocated across more than 100 innovative projects. And your idea could be next. Approved project submissions can receive up to $100,000 in XLM per project. So head over to communityfund.stellar.org to get started.
Calling all developers. Score a Consensus 2024 Developer Pass for just $109, but act fast. Only a limited number of these passes are available. You may have heard that Consensus ain't for devs, but here's why you're wrong. Consensus is the only place you can fully immerse yourself in a multi-chain environment and learn directly from 20-plus chains, including Arbitrum, Chainlink, Solana, and more. Enjoy 3 days of intensive learning with technical talks, 40-plus expert speakers, and 20-plus in-depth workshops, including dedicated half-days for Ethereum and Bitcoin, and 3 full days of programming on our Protocol Village stage. Consensus 2024 is happening May 29th through 31st in Austin, Texas. Don't miss your chance to network at curated developer meetups, find new career opportunities, and explore hundreds of side events and hacker houses around town. Grab your $109 developer pass today, but remember, this exclusive offer is limited. Visit consensus.coindesk.com now to secure your developer pass before they're gone. Explore the epicenter of blockchain innovation at Consensus 2024. And we're back with Brendan Farmer of Polygon, having a pretty incredible discussion about the Aglayer. Just real quick one, and then I'm going to throw it to Sam, who has some questions. I'm curious, one thing we see in this blockchain race is one team comes up with something, and then you see all the other teams just immediately race to do the same thing. Sam wrote about the emergence of the stacks last year and the software development kit, the chain development kits, and that everybody had one. And it seems that happens a lot. I'm curious if any of these other teams racing to build their own Aglayers now? Or?
Yeah, there are. I think a lot of teams realize that fragmentation is a real problem. And a lot of teams realize that a single chain will always be limited in throughput and capacity. Even if you're able to really push the limits of engineering and vertically scale, the Solana approach, you're always going to run into limits either in terms of throughput or in terms of giving developers the flexibility to make different choices in their execution environment. That will never be possible with a single chain. And so if you accept that the future will be a set of heterogeneous chains, then the question is how do these chains not compete with one another? How do we build network effects around the ecosystem? And so I think what we've seen is the Aglayer concept really resonates with the people that are working in the space and kind of understand the design. And so, I think competition is really good for the Ethereum ecosystem. And I think it's not a bad thing.
One thing kind of to the same note, but also going back to a question that I forgot if it was you, Brad, or Margo was asking earlier. It does feel like time and time again, we have these solutions to fragmentation. And as a result of everybody releasing these fragmentation solutions, we just get more and more fragmented. I wonder how you think about that in the context of Aglayer. So you mentioned network effects are obviously going to be a boon. to this service should a lot of people adopt it. How do you avoid it from just becoming another thing where everybody has their ag layers and we're fragmented again, we need something else to layer over all of those?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I think the way that you avoid fragmentation is you build a system that is credibly neutral and is not trying to rent, seek, or extract value in the short term. And I think it's fair to say that Polygon really stands alone in our approach. We're not trying to take sequencer fees like other ecosystems. We're not trying to limit the execution environments or the clients that chains can use. We're not trying to impose governance decisions on individual chains. And so I think that's a good start. And I think beyond that, I think it's like, you know, like any ecosystem building project in crypto, you just need to like convince builders and you know, allow them to have conviction and confidence in what you're doing and kind of your.
So what is the business case for you all? You're not rent seeking, you said, in the short term. Like what is the short term you know, revenue model for Polygon to build this? And then what is the long term model?
Yeah, so I would say that we're not rent seeking in the short term or the long term.
Okay.
I think that the goal is the approach and the perspective, I think, for Polygon is a little bit different, because we had a, you know, a fresh token in 2020 and 2021. We ran the playbook that you use to like attract TVL and maximize the value bridge to your ecosystem. And I think the prospect of doing that again, like, didn't really make sense. I think it's like a fairly inefficient process, and you know, it doesn't lead to like long-term durable value that's created on your chain necessarily. And so I think for us, like, we just had to figure out a different approach. And I think that like our perspective was, it's much better to be like part, like a slice of a growing pie than it is to try to like, you know, create a world in which all crypto activity like occurs on your platform. I think, you know, I think there are some like options for value capture in the long run that like within the ecosystem. But I think in the short term, we're very focused on like being aligned with other chains that join the ag layer, and like our own chains that we run within this ecosystem, like assuming that they will grow as the ecosystem grows.
So I imagine it does seem like in general, it's almost, we mentioned network effects in a different context, but it is a game of networks where, just like with Facebook, even like with Amazon, when it was like sort of more of a loss leader for the company, it's always a game of just trying to get users and then figuring out later on how to monetize those users. Do you feel like crypto has kind of been plagued isn't even the word, because it is like we're early in the industry, but are you worried that we are kind of in this weird sort of like turf battle where it's like, okay, layer twos, now the layer two race is over, it's kind of shaking out, we'll add a new layer. But if layers don't work, then we're going to add like some, you know, service, like some, you know, block building service or an analytics thing on top of it. It's all, people are trying for regulatory and for financial reasons to be that. They want to be the one that is like the funnel. How do we get out of that? Or is that just the game forever and ever? Maybe that's just business. I don't know.
Yeah. So I think the way you put it is kind of perfect and lines up really well with how I kind of view the dynamic in the industry. I think that projects are really, really focused on like short-term value capture and establishing moats. And I think like largely to their detriment. So I think the way that we avoid capture by any single entity is to create like competitive marketplaces like everywhere on the stack. And so I think like shared sequencers and like coordination infrastructure will sort of exist on top of the ag layer and will facilitate a lot of the cross-chain interaction that we see. But it's really important that like those projects don't become the point in the funnel where like all the value is extracted from the ecosystem and directed to a certain project. And so I think like, I think we have some idea of how to do this at the execution layer and at the coordination infrastructure layer. But I think like establishing coordination or establishing competitive marketplaces for block building, for sequencing, for execution. I think that like we can kind of see how to do that, but I think it's really important to like build a crypto ecosystem in which that happens.
And then maybe to, you know, top this all off and but take it into a different direction, you mentioned block building. That's something I'm personally really, really interested. We've talked about it a little bit on this show, but I'm curious what, you know, I actually don't know enough about AgLayer and your approach there. Can you just kind of like give broadly an overview of like, what is that marketplace? And is MEV still the same kind of a force as it is there, as it is on Ethereum and other chains?
Yeah, so this is a great question, and it's one that Brad might have to cut me off if I get too technical. But so the way that I would think about the AgLayer is like the AgLayer is sort of this like cryptographic infrastructure that's basically enforcing that by the time everything reaches Ethereum, it's all like safe, like all like cross-chain interaction is consistent. This shared bridge that allows for asset fungibility across chains is like respected and you know is protected, and so above that you have shared sequencers, which basically allow a proposer that's building a particular block on any chain to be shared across multiple chains. And so this is really important because it unlocks the ability for a single proposer to basically delegate their proposal rights to a builder. And a builder like doesn't look like sort of like a validator on Ethereum. A builder might be extremely sophisticated and professionalized and like have a huge like compute capacity and ability to execute transactions across many different blocks. But what this enables is for blocks to be built simultaneously by this builder across many different chains. And so a user can do things across many different chains in a way that feels like they're using a single chain. So they could have funds on some chain and want to like mint an NFT and sell it and take out a flash loan and do some arbitrage and like some like really convoluted degenerate DeFi thing that they can only do in this model where they're builders. And I think that to your question about market dynamics, I think that there's this sort of concern. But I think it's a superficial one. And the concern is, okay, if we have really high requirements for builders to be competitive, doesn't that reduce decentralization? Isn't that sort of like against the ethos of crypto? And I would say no, because decentralization kind of matters in different ways, depending on like where we look for it. So at L1, you want a ton of L1 validators because you want the system to be resistant to attacks and to sort of be like democratically like run and very impervious to like sort of capture and monopolization and all these things that really matter at that level of the stack. But if you look at builders, we're already getting censorship resistance from the L1 when we talk about rollups. And so what we really care about in the builder marketplace is that it be permissionless and that it be like reasonably competitive. And by reasonably competitive, we mean that like there are enough actors that are participating in building blocks that are bidding against one another, that there isn't really the potential for a single builder to extract rent or to act as a monopolist in this marketplace. And so I think like the way that the builder marketplace evolves will be really, really interesting. But I think it's a mistake to view it like from the same perspective that we view L1 validators.
No, I wanted to sort of circle back to some of the other stuff we were talking about earlier with Polygon and specifically the Polygon ZKEVM chain. There was the news recently that it went down on, I think it was like a weekend for 14 hours, like it was like a Saturday or Sunday. And maybe you can explain to our listeners like what exactly happened, but also what are you guys doing at Polygon to ensure that this doesn't happen moving forward? We've seen chains go down for a few hours, and we've talked a lot about that on here, you know, like Solana and some of these other L2s. But, you know, Polygon is a pretty big, has a pretty big presence in the Ethereum ecosystem. And so, yeah, like I just sort of want to get your take on what happened over there.
Yeah, sure. So I think it's like a good rule of thumb for anyone building in the ecosystem to never, like, I try to like, well, I have never celebrated when other chains go down, because I think it very much feels like there's this dynamic where like you might be next. And we've seen a lot of L2s that have had availability issues, a lot of L1s. And I think that we were just exposed, and some of the technical decisions that we made were exposed, particularly around the use of a custom client. And so we had an outage that lasted for, I believe 14 hours and was eventually remediated. In terms of what we're going to be doing to fix that, we're going to be completely changing the tech stack and everything from the prover to the client. And so like the ZKVM that we see 3 months from now will be completely unrecognizable from the current product. And I just think that there's this tension where you want to release a chain on mainnet because you want to get data and you want to get like some information about how people are going to be using it in the real world. And so I think there's always a tension between like technical maturity and being able to launch on mainnet and get that data. And I think that we're just like going through this kind of sort of like well-trodden, but also painful process of like fixing the issues that we found with that chain. And I think we're nearing kind of like the end, or at least the end is in sight for that. But I would just emphasize that like the level of technical maturity will increase really, really dramatically.
And the name in ZKVM is mainnet beta, right? Like this technology is still very much in its like nascent phase, but at the speed of how crypto works and blockchain works, it already feels like, you know, dog years, centuries or decades ago. Let's settle on that. But so how, you know, like you said, that the development of this kind of technology is going to be different in 3 months' time from the lessons learned now. How do you sort of precaution users who are, you know, playing around with this technology, that this is like, this technology is still in its, you know, has many gaps. And then how do you square that sort of with this sort of, you know, this whole conversation that we've been talking about, that your team is at the forefront of this like cutting edge new research technology that's still untested or hasn't been tested through and through necessarily. So like, what kind of precautions do you all have in place to sort of warn users like, yeah, come use the chain, but you know, that there's still a lot of hiccups, and hiccups is a light word, I guess I use.
Yeah. I mean, a 14 hour hiccup is a pretty bad. I think it's two things. So I think first it's like really being honest in our messaging about like what we view as the technical maturity and kind of the state of maturity of the chain. And so we've done that by calling it mainnet beta and by like prompting users with warnings when they bridge to ZKVM. But I think more importantly, it's being honest with ourselves about what we view as the risk and the technical limitation of the system, and guarding against that with like what we call training wheels. So basically precautions that even if the prover is broken or there are some issues that might allow an attacker to steal funds, we have those guardrails up so they can't effectively take advantage of those. Of those bugs and put user funds at risk. And so I would emphasize that like an outage is really bad, but it's certainly less bad than user funds being stolen from a bridge. And no user funds have been stolen from the ZKVM bridge. And I think that's in large part due to the precautions that we've taken with training wheels. I think in terms of the like how we square this sort of inconsistency and tension between like being really successful on the R&D side and then having like I think less success and less technical maturity on the implementation side, I think it's just sort of completely different skill sets. So like the issues that we've had with ZKVM have not really been ZK related at all. They've been related to the technical decision to use a custom EVM client. And that's something that I think everyone at Polygon wishes that we could go back and change. But we have just had to work on remediating that over the past few months and this year. But I think it's just like for us internally as an organization, fixing that pipeline from technical R&D, which I think, you know, most in the industry would agree that we're pretty good at, and like actually ensuring that we're able to build stable and successful products.
Hey, Brendan, you mentioned the training wheels, and that's a concept that comes up a lot. And if I read correctly, when this happened, it went to the Security Council. Is that right?
Yes.
And that's a group of humans who make a decision, right? And I was curious, is that the first time that group of people has been called? And I'd love to hear kind of how that worked in practice. You know, did you have to raise people on their cell phones in the middle of the night, or how did you corral people? How did it work in practice when that was called on?
Yeah. So I and my team were not involved. We have not been involved thus far in the actual production engineering of the ZKVM. So we work on the R&D side, and you know, eventually our work will be incorporated into ZKVM in the near future. But I think it was basically what you described, which is the Security Council is composed mainly, the majority are external to Polygon. And so it was just about reaching them, explaining the situation, and ensuring that they could sign off on an emergency upgrade.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. I had another question, maybe completely out of the blue. I don't know if you've gotten this one, and it may not be a well-formed question, but we had Sriram Kannan of Eigenlayer on last week, and his vision, or their vision, of how the Ethereum security gets extended seems to be a totally different setup, right, from the L2s connected by ZK proofs, or the fraud proofs and the optimistic rollups. And I'm curious, is the L2 vision, is that in competition with the Eigenlayer liquid restaking vision or restaking vision, or do they work together?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So so I would say they're not necessarily in competition. And so there are areas where restaking can be like an augmentation of like a ZK powered ecosystem. So like the latency for ZK proof generation is still like long enough where you don't want users to be waiting on, or chains to be waiting on proof generation in order to move forward. And so in certain cases, you can imagine services like Espresso is a shared sequencer that is planning on doing something like this, where you can use Eigenlayer restakers to basically provide finality at lower latency than proof generation or Ethereum finality. And so that's an instance where I think the two can be complementary. I do think that there are cases in which validity proofs are clearly superior to a crypto economic guarantee. So if you think about like what's required to crypto economically secure a system, you need to actually pay validators to actually restake ETH for your service. And you need to ensure that there's enough stake such that the cost of launching an attack is higher than the potential reward that an attacker would receive if the attack is successful. And so if you think about like from a capital and efficiency perspective, this is actually like much, much more expensive than just the cost of proof generation, which is actually very, very low. And so we've already seen instances in which like sort of like a crypto economic alternative to validity proofs actually ends up being much, much more expensive than just using validity proofs in the first place. And so a good example of this is like optimistic rollups have a 7-day withdrawal period. And this withdrawal period, I think, is very adverse to users because they have to have their funds locked up. They're holding a volatile asset that they can't move or can't access. And so obviously what most users do is they exit optimistic rollups via third-party bridges. And so this is bad for two reasons. First, they're trusting the bridge to not be hacked or not be compromised, which I think is not an ideal scenario. But the second thing is like the capital cost of exiting third-party bridges. If you look at the total that users have paid on third-party bridges on Arbitrum, it's actually like $35 to $40 million over the lifetime of the chain. And if you compare that to the cost of just generating proofs for every transaction on Arbitrum, it's actually like 100x smaller than paying liquidity providers and like sort of taking this like crypto economic shortcut around having validity proofs. And so I think that there are like not identical but similar cases for restaking versus validity proofs.
That's super interesting. And I think we're going to wrap it up pretty quickly here, Brendan. But one more. Margot obviously was writing day in, day out about the recent Denkun upgrade on Ethereum and the EIP-4844 and the new blob market. And we're sort of still in early days of seeing that. And I don't know if that's your area in particular, but I'm curious, what's the Polygon perspective on kind of how it's working out so far?
Yeah, I mean, it's not really my area of expertise, but I think so far it's really promising. It's managed to reduce funds in a really meaningful way for rollups. I think that like as we see more organic usage and you know, hopefully like L2 usage in general increases pretty dramatically, then I think we will see fees start to hit capacity limits for data availability. But I think the roadmap toward sharding DA and toward increasing that capacity on Ethereum is a really important part of scaling.
All right. Thank you, Brendan. Really, really appreciate you coming on with us and answering all of our questions and dialing it in for us and our audience. And that is a wrap for this week's The Protocol Podcast. And we would like to thank our producer, Michelle Musso, and our booker, Mel Montañez. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening to The Protocol Podcast. If you have any questions about any stories or comments, please reach out to us at podcasts@coindesk.com. Subject line, The Protocol. You can listen to us weekly on Coindesk Podcast Network or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, please subscribe to our weekly newsletter, The Protocol, on coindesk.com. Brendan, are you a subscriber to The Protocol newsletter?
Of course.
I think so.
Well, I should be.
We're getting a new one tomorrow.
All right. Thanks a lot. See you next week.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.
Ah, spring. Nothing like the world progressing towards summer to inspire your own progress. That's what life's all about. In your career, relationships, and your finances. Let's talk about that last one. With the Chime Secured Credit Builder Visa Credit Card, it's easy to start building credit with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments with no annual fees or interest. So your weekly grocery run can feel even more productive, and that morning coffee can taste like a little victory. And if your credit scores grow, so could your opportunities to get lower rates on loans, like for a new ride or finally having a home to call your own. Sounds like progress, right? With Chime Secured Credit Card, you can start improving your credit scores right away. Get started today at chime.com/build. That's chime.com/build. Chime. Feels like progress. The Chime Credit Builder Visa Credit Card is issued by Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal and OTC advance fees may apply. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.